This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Oh, you guys are back. I am so happy that you're here. Wherever you are you driving? Are you walking? Are you jogging? Are you working out? You just sitting? Because I always do different things when I'm listening to podcasts. But this one is going to have your heart racing because it's talking clothes and retail ahead of the holiday season. But I want to begin with this question. Who among you has, now listen carefully, who among you has never stepped inside a Gap store, Old Navy, J. Crew, Madewell, or Ann Taylor in your life? You've never been in one. If you say you haven't, you're totally lying because they're ubiquitous. And depending on the decade, at one point or another, each one was the place to buy clothes. I mean, some might not be as cool right now, but they all have one undeniable thing in common at their most popular points. They were run by the same guy. Millard, a.k.a. Mickey Drexler. In the 1980s, when Ann Taylor was hanging by a thread with dowdy offerings shunned by a fast-growing population of ambitious working women, Drexler, at age 36, was named CEO, overhauled the designs, flipped the chain to profitability, and doubled the number of stores. When the Gap could not keep its super popular khakis stocked because shoppers just had to have multiple pairs, Mickey was the CEO. I mean, remember when people used to get excited when the new J. Crew catalog came in the mail? It was inevitably filled with pages of gorgeous but so natural 20 and 30-somethings, chilling in cozy cabins and romping in the snow. The brand got so hot, Barack Obama's daughters wore J. Crew coats to their dad's presidential inauguration, sparking a run on the designs. Yep, that was Mickey at the helm. Oh, and Old Navy, the apparel chain that became the fastest in history to reach $1 billion in sales. Mickey invented the brand out of thin air. Okay, I'm not even finished with his incredible successes, but how did a kid growing up in the hardscrabble Bronx in the 1940s and 50s manage to become the most successful retail clothing CEO in history? I cannot wait to open up Mickey Drexler's bag of secrets to success, especially at a time when the retail clothing business is facing huge challenges. Mickey, welcome to Everyone Talks to Liz.
Thank you, Liz. Good to be here. By the way, I never think of myself as the most successful. I think of myself as having to do better, always being a student, and I learn every day.
Well, that's the sign of a very smart business person who never sits on their laurels. And that's so you. I mean, Mickey, it's so rare to have two successes in retail apparel, but time and time again, you've really had the Midas touch in one of the toughest industries in the world. And I kind of want to get to the bottom of where you got that Midas touch. I mean, did you come from a family that worked in retail?
No, I grew up in the Bronx very modestly. My father worked in the shipping room of a coat manufacturer, a woman's coat manufacturer.
That's retail.
Well, but he was a shipping clerk, so whatever. But no, I think I'm a big believer in DNA, what people have inside of them. And, you know, I always say this. Don't care where people went to college. Don't care what their grades were or their board scores were. And when I meet people, and it's taken over time, over the time for me to learn all this, I want to know about their life. I start from their growing up and what they did. And I also sense they have to be a little nervous because that's natural. And I start to schmooze with them. And I learned much more that way than going over a resume that's been worked on for months or rehearsed interview.
See, now I'm falling in love with you because Warren Buffett always says, I am not interested in who has an MBA or from what school. I just want to know what kind of fire you have in you And well, the Yiddish word is sechel, intelligence.
Oh, hello.
It's natural intelligence.
My grandparents spoke Yiddish at home, you know.
So you know sechel.
100 I know a lot of Yiddish words, yeah. But whatever.
Well, so you said you grew up in the Bronx.
Yep.
1950s apartment living in the Bronx. Describe it.
Well, you know, I didn't know any better. I lived in the Bronx in a ground floor apartment on Barnes Avenue, 2911. And who knew that? I'd never been out of the Bronx. I used to go to the city once in a while on the subway. But, you know, you don't know when you grow up like that what you're missing. And when I started to go to overnight camp, I started to see a little of what I was missing. But, you know, my dad always wanted to be successful, whatever. Mm-hmm. And my mom was ill, died when I was 16. Mm. And so I wouldn't trade growing up in the Bronx, although in hindsight, I didn't love growing up there. But I always wanted to be someplace else, not because of the Bronx, because of my own little environment.
But wasn't that a driver in a way?
Huge.
Had you not had that, might you be where you are today?
Well, you know, it's a good question. I thank, in hindsight, that it's a place where you everything one did, they did on their own. There was no fancy kids in the neighborhood, which I liked. It was very mixed neighborhood, Jewish, Italian, Black, and Latino. And but I never thought about any of that. I went to PS 76, and I never liked school. Never. I always had a school phobia. And, you know, you just get through.
You get through, and getting through meant you went to City College, correct?
I went to Bronx Science, which changed my life in hindsight, because all of a sudden I'm meeting all these smart people, and they all went to college. I was the first one in my family on my mother's side of 8 cousins. I was the only one who went to college, which in the 60s was not, but I thank Bronx Science for that.
That was the high school, and
yep.
Worked your way up, and you ended up at Buffalo, right?
I ended there. I went to City College for 2 years. For personal reasons, I had to get out of my house, so, and I would have gone anywhere in America, but I ended up at Buffalo, and I was, you know, I liked it there. I was away on my own. I went there for 2 years, and, you know, it was nice to be away.
It was nice to be away, and what led you to, I'm going to work in the retail apparel industry?
Well, you know, a lot of it's serendipitous in a way. I interviewed for some companies, and once they don't answer my resume, I hate them, you know? It's just rude. And by the way, I'm that way today. If people, now everyone kind of returns my calls, but I remember what it was, and I never forget what it was. So I'm always a little cynical. But they didn't respond. I took a summer job at a department store, and I loved it like crazy. It was A&S. I worked in the young men's jeans department. And I fell in love with the action. Plus, you know, I never had like a normal job where I wasn't schlepping coats or something. And, but I'll tell you what happened. It was very interesting. They liked me a lot. I thought I was going to get a job. They offered me a job. But they offered someone who was just in my class, he was fine, $500 more than me. I didn't know exactly why I was so angry. I figured out a few years later, because that's a tell about what's to come. Mm-hmm. So I was interviewing at Bloomingdale's at the same time, and it wasn't a matter of the money. I thought it was, but it wasn't. How the hell could you think I'm doing a great job and offer my friend $500? I was angry. Long story short, I worked for Bloomingdale's. Best experience my first 3 years. I worked with a woman, Katie Murphy.
What year was this?
This was 1969.
Oh, the early years.
Yeah, and they were hot then.
Oh, yes.
And I was very fortunate. I came in. They gave me a department to run my second day, lucky. And a woman who was my, I guess, a rabbi or whatever, Katie Murphy, was the fashion director. She could have been anything, but in those days, a woman was, you know, they get slotted. So I worked with her about a year or two. She was like a mentor, if you call it that. And we'd go to Europe together, and I didn't realize how lucky I was. And we really got along well. We went to factories in those days. You went to Italy. And I thought this was what it was like, and it should be. So I did that for about 3 years. I stayed another 3 years because, and then it started to wear on me that, and this is inside of me, that I wanted to respect and learn from my bosses. I have a very high standard. I don't know why, but I didn't get that feeling. And I looked at the future there, and I said, I was 26 or 7, I said, I don't care what job I have, I don't want to be in this business. Now, my next mistake was I took a job at Macy's. I was there a year and a half. Same thing, but not to get personal about the people. It wasn't my thing.
Right. You wanted to be energized.
Energized, creative, and all that. And you want to work, whatever. My third job was a mistake, even worse. I went to A&S again. I suffered through 4 years, or 4.5 years. And I kept saying, what am I going to do with my life? And, you know, I was making a nice living, so I couldn't do this or that. But I got a call from Ann Taylor's corporate owner, and they called and asked me if I'd be interested in joining them and working for the founder, who I knew. Mm-hmm. And Ann Taylor, then, it was great. Then, you know, most fashion companies, they go down, they go up, they do whatever.
Right. 1 minute they're hip, and then the next they're not.
Yeah. And it's very hard to maintain that. Anyway, I said, I'm interested, but I don't, he was a nice guy, I knew him, but I don't want to work for him. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I was a, you know, the Yiddish term shtark or whatever. But, and then they said, well, we'll make you the CEO. And I still said no because I was nervous. I had to pay the rent. Friend of mine said a couple of days later, he says, what's going on? I tell him, he goes, take the job tomorrow.
Huh.
And I did. He said, I'd rather run a $25 million business as the CEO than a $500 million business in a bureaucracy. I called the next day praying it was still open. And that really put me on a road to, you know, running companies.
Well, isn't that a lesson in and of itself that packages, I always try and say, like, opportunities fly past you in packages you don't recognize. Grab them.
100%.
This is Everyone Talks to Liz, and we will be right back. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Klayman. Just go to Indeed.com/Klayman right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Klayman. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. From Ann Taylor, which you turned around and made extraordinarily successful, then comes The Gap. Oh boy, that's what you are known for in many, many ways. Because back then, The Gap, all I remember is fall into the gap.
That made it famous.
Yes.
I knew that.
The Gap, yeah.
Everyone knew the name.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I didn't shop there because it was just sort of off-brand sweatshirts and...
It was... Even as it was a mess, all discounted. 20 different labels. It was a mess.
Yeah.
And it was going down. Don Fisher, the founder, he knew he needed help, which is something when you need help, you have to recognize it. So long story short, I never wanted to leave New York City, but I couldn't afford an apartment to move. And I had one child then, and you know, two was coming. And we lived in an apartment that we paid 1976, not much. I was on the board of the building.
What was the Ann Taylor CEO job paying at that point?
Well, it was paying. I didn't negotiate very well.
Can't be good at everything.
No, I don't negotiate well. It was paying $125,000 a year.
Okay.
I got 1,000 shares of options. I didn't even know what options were. And as luck would have it, wasn't lucky for me, a big corporate bureaucratic department store group bought us. I stayed for another 3-4 years because I was learning. They were a pain in the butt dealing with them. But, you know, most I'm anti-bureaucracy, and I worked with large companies, which, you know, I was part of. But most big companies are run, in my opinion, by people who don't want to upset anything, the apple cart.
Right.
Steve Jobs, he would take risks every minute of every day, and he was by far the best, in my experience, leader.
Exactly. And yet, that was well after you got to the Gap.
Yep.
So you get hired to fix the Gap. What was the first thing you tackled?
I tackled my mental state. It was Peggy and I. Well, I moved out. I left Ann Taylor on a Friday. I go out Sunday to go to work. I'm checking into a hotel. And by the way, for the first 6 months, I was checking in and out of hotels. I didn't know to say I want an apartment, you know, whatever. And it was the biggest cultural shock I've ever had. San Bruno Office Park, company that has two buildings, and the culture was discount, on sale, and all that. And I had a very personal, difficult time first couple of years getting used to public company. The stock was dropping. Mm-hmm. And there I am thinking, what the hell did I do? And it took a couple of years to kind of, you know, San Francisco's, you know, when you come from New York or the Bronx, it's in your blood. But it was extremely personally difficult. And Peggy, my wife, would say, how do you go to work and run this public company and come home and like be not too happy? So, but you know, without her, you know, she was a great partner.
So what turned it around?
What turned it around is, well, I'll never forget every day. Vision, I always had an imagination for what it should be. In fact, I wanted to start my own company for what Gap became. I listed, when I worked at A&S, I listed a bunch of styles that everyone in America might need. It's white space. And what turned it around is always a team of people hiring, firing, and relentless pursuit of your goals and having a skill in merchandise or whatever.
Was there one design that flipped the switch?
Well... Yeah, there was two or three. I mean, one is framed, was the buffalo plaid flannel shirt. There was a 10-button Henley, the pocket T-shirt.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And, you know, it wasn't anything you learn anywhere, but, you know, you're a student of how people dress. And I was very inspired by Benetton in those days.
Oh, the Italian sweater
company. Yeah, and Ralph Lauren always had great style and taste. And then Brooks Brothers, which was owned by the same owners as Ann Taylor. And in those days, I watched it decline. You knew it was happening. It takes some quality out of a business. But what I loved about Brooks Brothers, they had their own label, so no one could put their stuff on sale. And sale, even today, is the way the world goes. And so with that learning at Ann Taylor, They call it direct to consumer. They didn't have a fancy term, but I developed an Ann Taylor studio. We worked with vendors, and Ann Taylor became its own brand.
So you brought that to the Gap.
Gap. Yeah. Well, Gap had Gap was about 33% of Levi's. The relationship was a nightmare. 33% fall into the Gap discounting. And Don was extremely, and I worked with two of his sons. He was very supportive. I mean, he should have been. But, you know, sometimes you have battles with a CEO or a founder. But when I got there, I just hired... You can't do it without the right team members.
Right, absolutely. But also that vision of American style. And the khaki moment seems to be almost just etched in stone for the Gap success story.
Well, you know, I was fortunate. I worked. I have a weakness for creative people. I'm only kidding about a weakness. And people who have imagination, vision, or taste and style, it was the stand. It was a qualification in a certain area. You know, the technology, et cetera. I didn't know anything about that, but I spend all my time, I try to, on what a customer sees. That's from emails to letters to, you name it, a store.
Store design.
Store design and going into a store. And to this day, I do the same thing. And people think I'm a pain. They think I'm criticizing them. And I had to explain last week, they thought, I said, I'm not criticizing. I won't, you know, I used to get a little passionate. Mm-hmm. And so I like to get reviews from the team. And I found they, like someone who will say anything to me said, you know, you're always right, but it's the way you deliver it. So as of last week, today,
gotta learn.
She says, don't get mad. I said, you know, I don't get mad anymore, but. So the Gap was, I mean, very tough. It turned around because we redid the entire business. We had 18 brand names. I'll never forget one was called Foxtails. It was the woman's jean line. And someone said, well, that name on surveys is very popular. Surveys? And a lot of companies do that. I was forced by my board to have focus groups. And I sat through it because I think they handcuffed me to the chair. I mean, I'm listening to people who don't have the vision, et cetera. And it was really
painful.
Difficult. It was painful.
You said, just, you know what, let me do it. And so then who came up with the idea of khakis?
Well, it's an evolving thing. The first thing was get washed jeans. They had all rigid jeans, 2 for $26. Khakis, everything evolves. You come up with ideas. I like have every day. You see something. I was walking down Madison yesterday. I see a friend of mine who has a really nice store. And he had decals on the window saying, GQ says this store. It was nice. Sid Mashburn, terrific guy. And I took a picture, and I said, we get some things. Decals on the window said, this is the best men's store. That was an idea.
A write-up.
Yeah, but he put the decals with the headline every single day. I can't shut my brain off, but you know, I feel things that it's, you know, sometimes the standards become a little high, but they are.
You got to be an idea factory, which leads me to one of your biggest, most successful ideas, Old Navy. That turned into what is written up in the history books as, I mean, from zero to 180, you created it out of thin air.
I was in Paris on the way to the airport. And on Rue Saint-Germain, I'm just looking out the window and I see a bar called Old Navy. Kind of a little dive. I didn't go into it. I said to the woman I was with, I said, what a great name for a company. And I registered it the next day in America. It was free. And that was the name. But the board of directors didn't like the name and dot, dot, dot. In today's money, a couple of million dollars later, we had to hire two name labs. Yeah. And then I went through this. And that's when I saw, you know, talking to myself, what the hell am I doing this for? Because if you name your child something, you don't have like a board of directors saying you can't name them that.
It's called the in-laws.
Right. Anyway, opened the first store and the board insisted Gap Old Navy. You know, it's like having Pepsi and Coke. And I said to, you know, the family, whatever, I said, we do that and there'll be no Gap left in 5 years. But we opened up Gap, Old Navy, whatever. Store, in spite of it, I love the vibe, and you get the sense on the first thing. Mm-hmm. And then the second floor, second store in South San Francisco, frankly, no one was going to know anyway, so I called it Old Navy. They lined up. We had Cindy Crawford there.
Come on.
This is a million years ago, but it was huge, and it was very exciting, but how do you keep it going? So I think in hindsight, you don't rest on your laurels. Because if you stop driving or trying to beat yourself, then you ought to leave.
You've got to stoke the idea of fire. You just talked about how you weren't a techie guy. You didn't understand technology a lot. And yet, the most brilliant man in technology, Steve Jobs,
100%.
Decides, I want Mickey Drexler on my board because I want to open retail stores. Wow, you got that call, and what did you think?
I said no.
Oh, come on. You did not.
No, Steve we met at a Napa Valley, the mutual friend's birthday. He come up, he starts schmoozing with me. I'm thinking, Steve Jobs, big deal. He is, you know. He was always a big deal. And he's schmoozing and then follows up and says, I'd like you to join the board. And I said, you know, I have no interest. I don't like to be on boards.
No board of Apple. Oh,
but
my gosh.
You know what happened? For a year, he doesn't give up. And I know, and he's a very seductive guy. I love Steve. I idolized him. So he says to me, you join my board, I'll join Gap's board.
Okay.
Deal.
Now
you know
talking.
Why? Because Steve... I knew the board was very inside, not my inside, but, you know, family and all that. I said, he will be Steve Jobs and so difficult at times that I love. So he said, yes, he lived up to his reputation and he was difficult. But, you know, I love the guy and he would upset people. He'd be irreverent. That's him. And it was great.
So he says to you, I want to open Apple stores.
Yeah, like Gap. He wanted to be like Gap Retail, direct their own stores. And I thought it was a really good idea. But
what was your imprimatur on those stores? Because they're white, they're welcome, glass.
I suggested we build a store, which we did it at Gap, inside a warehouse, big store, make it however big. And his first store, I wasn't part of it. I said, it's awful, Steve. It was. I said, the decor and it's fighting the merchandise. You can't see the goods.
Huh.
I didn't know much about it, but Apple is very clean, white, clean. And so we designed a new store together. It was very Gap-ish-like. Mm-hmm. It's timeless. They still use a store today. And, hugely successful. I say he's the best retailer in the world. And the world misses Steve because he was a genius. He took the risks that he had to take. He took no prisoners. He was difficult. But so what? You have to be that way. He's a, American hero.
Well, the way you succeed sometimes is to break things. Yeah. You know, it's not to make friends.
Right. You break the rules. You have to be, contrarian to a lot of things. Common wisdom to me is just common. And the people that really build things, use uncommon wisdom.
J. Crew, you leave Gap. We don't have to get into the whole Megillah, but you were invited to leave. Translation fired. We've all been there.
One day notice, and $400 million to $15 billion, and whatever.
Look what I did. I brought it from tiny to huge, and it doesn't matter. They're going to do what they're going to do.
Yeah.
This is Everyone Talks to Liz, and we will be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
So you land a J. Crew. Now, you talk about hiring the right people in the team. During the time when J. Crew was so cool, the name Jenna Lyons, she became, in a way, the person. She was the one who was designing things. Give the scoop.
In the interests of being tactful.
Uh-oh, here it comes.
I could never have done it without Jenna.
Okay.
And the rest of the team. Because I could point to people I could never done it without. And, Jenna now has taken a different direction. And, I wish her well. I speak to her, and she was hugely important. I met her. She was there for 20 years. And every time I had a new job, I'd interview everyone in the company the first week. You're out, you're in, that. When I met her, she was the one. I chose her, and I choose, the best. You got to spot the creativity in a creative job.
Well, she became a muse for women my age at the time because in the catalog, they had Jenna's picks.
Right.
Jenna's picks.
Well, I encourage that because, that's what I encouraged. But sometimes, you read your own press.
Yeah,
you get comfortable. That happens to all of us. And so it was a great run. And then at the end, of course, when you have investors, I worked for investors and I controlled, they control a bigger piece.
Right.
What do investors know about the Schmata business? Hardly anything. And
everyone wants to weigh in.
Yeah. And everyone, I used to call it the Sunday picnics that all the board members, the family discussed, things that, and I get the ideas and all that.
It sounds very Succession-ish. But today, you're still in the business. You are the chairman of a company your son founded called Alex Mill. I've been on the website, sweaters. What is the look that you're going for here? What is the feel?
It's always the same for me. It's style. It's taste. It's clothes that are not, the clothes don't wear the person. The person wears the clothes. And it just always looks right and chic. Now, you make a lot of mistakes. And one of the key partners is Samsak, who was the number two under Jenna for years. And then he's the one who built Madewell, which, we started. And so that's it's style, taste, good value, relative, and no thing goes unnoticed. No detail is too small. And that is so important.
Oh, you're speaking my language. For our viewers who watch, I get so hyper about the lower third banners that say things. I'm like, this has to be sexy or it's sparkly. Why aren't we saying something different in a creative way? I'm very detail-oriented. I'm glad to hear you are, too.
Well, you have to be. Customers in restaurants, I go to a few regulars, and I'm like the manager in the restaurant. I say, the eggs are too salty, and I know them. And, but that's it, and it's inconsistent. It's very difficult. Fashion, food, be consistent. And every detail matters.
It does.
I mean, every single one.
Mickey, where do you see the retail fashion world in 10 years?
Well, I have no idea, but I'll tell you what I think today. And it's not a popular thought, maybe. I was reading the New York Times yesterday, and then I was reading, I forgot what other, a magazine, not the Times Magazine. And there was an interview, and they're talking about designer clothes today, and they're really logo clothes. It's a way to buy, in my opinion, I hope no one gets mad at me, but people buy handbags are probably accessories, most of the business. And in my opinion, it's a logo business. And it's a logo business that, you know, I love, like Hermes is my favorite. So it's more discreet, maybe. Mm-hmm. Some of it's not discreet, but you always know where the handbag's from. There's nothing anonymous in that world. And the prices, as they said in the article, and no surprise, they are up 25% this
outrageous.
Year.
Outrageous, yeah.
And I think you need a mortgage to buy the clothes. And so I don't know where it's going to go. The best retail store clothing, in my opinion, is TJ Maxx. And Carol Meyer, which I always mention her name, she was the CEO. Now she's still the chief merchant. They do about $60 billion+. Mm. And if you look at the stores, I mean, it's brilliant. It's like a treasure hunt.
Yeah.
Everything she sells is in a department store. And people know, go to TJ Maxx, you'll see the same thing. In fact, most of the people, and they're going to argue, they do most of their business with TJ Maxx. But I think the business is, I'm disappointed today. I mean, I don't really care much. It's not that important. But I think the style has gone out of it in the creativity, and the discounting and promotion is not there. So I can't predict 10 years, but I look at the car industry. I used to love cars. And when I was a kid, I knew every model every year. Now, when I call an Uber, I don't know what car is what. They say, oh, a Toyota's on the way. This is on the way. And we have someone in the office, Bridget. She says, she'll show me a picture or something. She's a car buff. But, you know, style and design, you know, Steve wanted to, if he lived longer, was going to do an iCar at Apple. He loved engineering. He was a big believer in electric and all that. But, you know, unfortunately, he was taken well before his time.
As I look at you, I wish our people could see, our listeners could see. You look so chic right now. Okay. What are you wearing? You're wearing a T-shirt.
Alex Mill slub T-shirt.
Okay. So you're wearing a less expensive T-shirt. It's sort of mix and match.
Yeah, well,
an old pinstriped button-down and then
blue.
The
every
scarf.
Shirt is white or version of a blue and white stripe. That's me. And then, you know, you got to have the other little special. This is something no one does these anymore.
Okay, I'm looking at your shoes.
And I used to buy from W. Bill. Now I'm an older guy, but I remembered. I used to go to Europe a lot. W. Bill was a knitwear and sock store on Old Bond Street. And I used to buy all my socks from them. They had hand-knit Argyle socks. Now, I wasn't of the manner born, but, you know, I like things that are nice. And we still do business with the manufacturer of all those socks. And we brought in cashmere, because in my old company, I only wear cashmere socks. I don't care how hot it is. And they got rid of them. So we now have a really good cashmere sock business. You cannot buy a good cashmere sock. I searched the world about 2 years ago because it was a business I wanted to get into for us and personally. And it's hard to buy a good cashmere sock today.
Who is the best brand, in your opinion, that does it really well at a fair price?
Well, you know, I haven't seen their stores yet. I cannot believe the reputation that Irwin has as a supermarket.
Oh, yeah. There's one in Beverly Hills.
Yep.
I'm sorry. $38 for a small box of fresh salad.
No, but you know how much that store does?
I know.
Good friend of mine's in. Why? I've never been, but people are addicted. They love it. They opened one in Silver, whatever it's called.
Silver Lake?
Yeah, that's it.
California,
yeah.
Okay.
And they just opened a store, lines around the block. People say it's high price. Well, they used to say about Whole Foods was Whole Paycheck. But,
yes.
You know, they've since, you know, what happened there. But I've never seen the store, and I've never heard so much raving. I'm actually envious because that store... And, you know, I listened to a podcast about it. I mean, Irwin, and it's nowhere spelled backwards.
Which I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, my friend said, you know, he told me. And he
secret.
He's raved about it for 3 or 4 years. I don't think I've been to L.A. in that long. He's a very smart investor,
yeah,
Ken.
There's one right on, I think it's Cannon.
So you know the store.
Well, my whole family. Oh, let's go to Irwin. And we walk in. I'm trying to buy little bits of food. I mean, it was all really delicious, I will say. But, I mean, $250 later.
Well, you know, people have an emotional connection to certain businesses and, you know, brands. And they look for the greatest thing in the world. And in that case, you know, it's great. You know, you go to restaurants, they say they're great and they're all mediocre. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's
the
newest kid.
Yeah,
you know. So, but I've never seen it. But you say the other, what was the question? Who else does a great job?
Yeah.
I respect Zara. I think they do a great job. And when you do it consistently, year after year, and it's not up, it's not down, that, you know, I respect them a lot. I don't know them, but.
Well, I want to reveal something to you. When I was in college, I got a job at The Gap.
Did you learn how to fold?
Oh, that's all I did. I was folding in my sleep.
Which store was it?
It was the one right across from Sather Gate at UC Berkeley.
Got it. Yeah, on the corner.
Yeah,
sure.
Right there.
Yeah, I remember
right there.
That store.
And it was so much fun. It was a great atmosphere. And I'll tell you something. I loved working at The Gap.
Well, thank you. So did I until they gave me one day's notice.
Nikki Drexler, wonderful to
thank
hear
you.
Your story. Oh, thank you, my friend. Thank you so much. You have just heard, you guys, from one of these one-of-a-kind type of people. There aren't many in this world, but when they walk in, they light up a room, they suck out the oxygen because everybody wants to tap their brain and download their expertise, which is so innate. And this kind of record is highly unusual, and we are so honored to have Nikki Drexler. And I am honored that you guys are tuning in once again. Shoot me a Twitter at Liz Klayman. Oh, sorry, X. And I will, what did you make of that name change?
Well, I have no comment because our best-selling hat has an X on it. It's the only thing. We use X, and I'm going to try to sue Musk,
Oh, keep us posted on
that.
Well,
we don't have it patented, and I'm wondering if he does. I don't think anyone can own an X, but
he's good at patenting.
I didn't want to fool around with that fight, so.
good thought. Although something tells me you would win. Thanks, guys. Oh. Thanks for tuning in. As always, I'll see you next time. Want to listen ad-free? You can do it with a Fox News Podcasts Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And then Amazon Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day. Featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.